from Louisville Public Media. The Parklands of Floyd's Fork is about 4,000 acres of undeveloped land in southeast Louisville.
It protects more than 100 bird species, including the American bald eagle. There are these rare freshwater mussels that really only grow in this region, and Kentucky Glade Cress, which grows nowhere else in the world, and it's a little tiny plant. It's very delicate.
All of this parkland is connected by a 62-mile-long stream called Floyd's Fork.
This whole southeast region of Louisville is one of the last major undeveloped regions of the county. And the stream is the centerpiece of that whole region.
There's a new subdivision in the works for the Parklands, and it's pretty much a done deal. WFPL's environment reporter Ryan Van Velzer has been following the story. He joins us to talk about how the development could affect Floyd's Fork today on Recut. I'm Jonice Franklin.
Let me set the bigger picture first, and then I'll kind of hone it in.
Okay.
So the big picture is this is one of the last undeveloped regions of Louisville, and people are fighting to protect the environment in this region, which is centered around protecting this stream, Floyd's Fork. They want to make sure that it's there for future generations and prevent the environmental collapse of the aquatic life that's living in that stream. That's the stakes, right? And here, to make the stakes even bigger, not only is it important for the environment, it's also important for the economy because this stream is the crux of this nearly 4,000-acre park, which is a huge boon to this area. So if something bad were, if the stream were to go south, then that would affect the parklands, which would affect economic development in the area. So there's environmental stakes and there's potential economic stakes as well.
The local neighborhood association and an environmental conservation group called Friends of Floyd's Fork are concerned.
They're worried that the additional environmental impacts would cause aquatic life in the stream to die, which includes things like rare freshwater mussels, but also things like trout.
How exactly are they worried that the development will affect the stream?
Okay, so there are two primary ways that development affects streams. One is called runoff, and the other is sewage. Runoff, as Jeff Frank explains, is all of the byproducts that come off of like living in a house, herbicides, pesticides.
Oils and grease and bake pads and fertilizers and Chemlawn and herbicides and every bit of excrement that your dog or mine or the deer put in the woods washes off, and you have a bacteria problem on Floyd's Fork and you have a runoff nutrient and pollution problem.
But the development, Covington by the Park, is a conservation subdivision, which means it's meeting all of the city's standards for its conservation practices. Also, they sold 158 acres to the Future Fund, which is a group, a conservation group that protects land in perpetuity. And so they sold this 158 acres. Essentially, it's going to be protected in the same way the Parklands is protected, and it protects the piece of land that's closest to Floyd's Fork. So in a sense, and it's the most heavily wooded area in the region, and it's the closest to the stream. So they've actually, Covington by the Park has done a lot by selling that piece of land to prevent runoff from going into the stream, to be fair to them. But environmental advocates are still worried about possible consequences of runoff. So that's one side of things. The other thing is sewage, which is what they flush down their toilets and through their dishwashers. All of that sewage under this plan that they were talking about at the Planning Commission would go to Floyd's Fork Wastewater Treatment Center.
The State Division of Water and the Metropolitan Sewer District both agree it's one of the best treatment plants in the state, but that doesn't necessarily mean the treated water would be healthy for the stream.
They do a great job of getting out all the bacteria and E. coli and really dangerous pathogens. But it's what's left behind is all of these nutrients. It's essentially fertilizer, right? It's phosphorus and nitrogen that ends up flowing into Floyd's Fork, because basically this wastewater treatment center is at the near to the top of the parklands. And so it dumps treated wastewater into the stream, and then that flows through the parklands.
Mm.
And that increases the amount of nutrients in the stream, which sounds good, right? I mean, you're like, oh, nutrients, that's good, right? That makes plants grow, right? But the problem is that causes these harmful algae blooms, And these algae blooms eat up all this dissolved oxygen, and then essentially the aquatic life suffocates.
Oh.
Yeah. And that's why they die. And it's particularly can be – I mean, things like fish are a little bit more fish can move, right? They can swim to different places. So when they're like, boy, I can't breathe here, they just swim to a spot where it's easier for them to breathe. So they have the highest success of, like, surviving situations like that. But things like mussels, freshwater mussels, they can't move. They're in the same place. So if there's a lot of algae in that spot and they eat up all the oxygen, then those are kind of like the first things to go.
Oh.
What these conservationists and residents who live in the area are saying are that they're concerned that adding more sewage from 1,000 families roughly to this wastewater treatment plant would increase the sewage load so much that it would kill the stream.
The State Water Department and MSD say the treatment plant can process the increase in wastewater.
But that doesn't necessarily mean that the stream can handle it.
Can the stream handle it?
Well, so there's already bacteria problems from runoff. So both parties, both the state and these conservationists, are in agreement that runoff is bad for the stream and that further runoff is only going to be worse for the stream. The other issue, though, is the sewage. And Peter Goodman from the Division of Water says that additional nutrients will not affect the stream. And the conservationist says, yes, it will. Here's the evidence they have for that. Jeff Frank is looking at U.S. Geological Service has water monitors in the stream right now, and you can go look at it yourself online and see what happened last night and how the oxygen levels were in the stream. And a lot of that preliminary evidence shows dissolved oxygen levels dipping down below safe levels. So for certain times, for a couple hours a night, or for certain parts of the day, it can get down to a level that's unsafe for aquatic life in the stream. But these are also preliminary results that haven't been quality assured by scientists to make sure that there aren't any problems with the data. So preliminary evidence is showing this, but the historical evidence we have, the most recent study was from 2015, found that aquatic life in that area was healthy and safe. So that's what the Division of Water is looking at that, and the MSD is looking at that 2015 data saying, no, based on our readings, the aquatic life here is safe. And Jeff Frank is looking at this preliminary USGS data that says, you know, no, it's on the brink right now. And if you add more nutrient load, that could be enough to push it over the edge.
Have you spent any time out there?
I have. I spent some time out there. I've been hiking out there. It's a beautiful area.
Can you picture this development going in and what it would look like and how different it would feel out there?
You know, I don't think anyone would notice.
Really?
Because, I mean, if you lived in Fisherville, which is like the main town out there, you probably would. But even like the way the designs are going to be, if you're driving down Taylorsville Lake Road, there's going to be trees in the way. So you may not even realize that subdivision is there. The park itself is nearly 4,000 acres, right? And this development is 240 acres.
Right.
So it's pretty small in comparison, but it's enough to have an impact on the environment in the area. And it's also part of a larger conversation about how do we want to develop this area, and are we making decisions now that are going to protect the stream for future generations?
That's just so weird. That's so weird to me because it's this gorgeous place that it sounds like people want to go to, they want to experience, they want to be around it. And it sounds like people that these developers know that there is there's a market out there for people who would want to live there. This beautiful, you know, this stream and, you know, the land around it, but they have to destroy it or potentially destroy it in order to move people there. I think that's
this is
if
just
you say it out loud, you hear it. You know, like
this is just something that humanity has just started to come to terms with over the last couple of decades, right? Maybe with the modern environmental movement started in the 60s and 70s. And so just now, today, are we starting to understand the real environmental impacts that development can have and how we need to plan for the future to change that, because we've been really bad about that in the past.
I guess this is one of those things that maybe like decades from now we'll look back and be like, oh, that's when it got really bad.
We see that with so many things. And things can bounce back, so I shouldn't like say that they
can't.
It
takes time, though.
It takes a lot. It's a lot easier to not screw it up in the first place right. than it is to try and fix it after you destroyed it. Things like Beargrass Creek is what the future of Floyd's Fork will be like if we allow development to continue unabated. Beargrass Creek is the example of a collapsed stream.
Was it once a lot like what we're talking about now? Was it once a place where people went to and could kayak and fish and all that? Because I don't know anything about it.
Right. Well, no. I mean, hundreds of years ago, yes.
Okay.
But I don't think they were kayaking back then, but canoeing? Canoeing? Yeah. I mean, hypothetically, it was a big, beautiful stream when this whole area was covered in trees and forest. But, you know, during the 1800s and 1900s, when, like, coal smoke was, like, filling the city, it was even more disgusting because there wasn't proper. I mean, some of the sewer pipes in the city date back to the 1840s and 1850s. A large number of them do. Mm. But prior to that, there wasn't any sewers in the city. So people were just dumping their sewage in the stream. So officials tell me all the time, like, we are like way ahead of where we were 100 years ago. And that's very, very true. We are much better at keeping the environment clean than we were 100 years ago, but we still have a long way to go.
I think the environment is one of those things that people just don't – it's just not on the list of concerns, right, for the average person, I think.
I wouldn't say it quite like that, especially for, like, our generation and younger generations.
I think our generation's different.
It's more like it's such a huge, impossible problem that how do we do anything about it and how do we prioritize that? And in the 90s, it was always like, well, you can recycle. You can help the planet. And then now we're like, no, that wasn't enough. We're not. That's not really going to do it.
It didn't fix it.
A lot of modern environmental people like trying to tackle climate change and say thought leaders, I should say, talk about what we really need to do is stop this at the point of its production. So like when Starbucks decides it's not going to use plastic straws anymore, that's actually has a huge impact on the environment. Or when, you know, eventually if any of these oil companies, there's lawsuits going on right now with oil companies to try and get them to prove that they knew about global warming and that they could have done something about it, but they didn't, and they lied to the public in the same way that big tobacco did with cancer.
Right.
And actually get that force change that way. That's how you change things with the environment these days.
Because just recycling is not going to do it.
No.
That makes sense to, like, it really needs to happen, like, on a way higher level.
Yeah. Being an environment reporter is, like, being even more aware of the burden that you create or, like, the pollution that you create every single day.
Do you feel guilty?
Oh, all the time. But I've come to terms. That helps me come to terms with the guilt a little bit. Like, I'm doing what I still do what I can to a certain degree, which are often things that are not what you think they are, like, energy efficiency for your home, turning up your thermostat, living in a small space, having an old car. You know, people are like, oh, I'm going to go buy a new energy efficient car. And that's like, that's great. But if you just bought a new car a couple years ago, then that's way worse for the environment for you buying a new car than if you just kept your old one for a really long time. So it's more about like, don't consume too much. Yeah. Limiting consumption is the biggest thing that people can do to protect the environment, and then making environmentally conscious decisions when they do purchase things.
Were you this aware of your impact on the environment, like personally, before you started covering the environment?
No. I mean, like I'm much more aware of like pollution and like the chemicals and stuff that are out there all the time now. That's like, okay, like one example, when I walk down the street, here's a new thing I think about. When you walk down a street that's crowded with traffic, all of that car exhaust, and like I knew car exhaust was bad for me, but now I know the mechanism in which it's bad for me. It creates small particulate matter, which gets into your lungs. Some of it is so small that it can enter your bloodstream, and it travels around in your bloodstream, and it inflames your organs. And now certain studies are showing that constant inflammation can actually increase the chances of you getting type 2 diabetes, in addition to causing scarring on your lungs, increasing your risk for a heart attack or stroke. I don't want to know that stuff sometimes.
I'm hoping I can unknow it.
So people who live in big cities with more cars, ugh.
That's why like green spaces are so important. They're doing research on this right now, but there's already a lot of preliminary research that shows like living in an area with a lot of trees and grass is good for you.
Recut is produced by Louisville Public Media. Our executive producer is Laura Ellis. Our news director is Erica Peterson. Kojin Toshiro wrote our theme song. Special thanks today to reporter Ryan Van Velzer. You can read Ryan's story at WFPL.org. For more information about our show, visit Recut.org. If you want to get the latest episode of Recut as soon as we're finished making it, you can subscribe to us wherever you get your podcast. And let us know what you think by emailing recut@WFPL.org. I'm Joni Franklin. Thanks for listening.